It's a phrase that I've heard, I was only doing my job. And it's said all of the time by the most extraordinary of people in the most extraordinary of circumstances. I heard this phrase uttered time and again by the firefighters who were at Ground Zero on 9/11. I heard this phrase used by veterans from all of the wars that have been fought from the Second War on. I was only doing my job. There's nothing heroic about me. It's a phrase that's uttered in humility, and one that seems to be offered by people who would often be considered by us to be heroes, people who have done remarkable things. Yet when they say this, when those people we call heroes say this, they really mean it. I'm only doing my job. And the true heroes, the ones that we see as heroes, not the Tinseltown heroes, not the football players, not the Hollywood stars, but the heroes, the day-to-day heroes that change and transform human lives, for the most part, don't see themselves as heroes, which amazes me. It really does. To see themselves just as having done their job, that they think that this is what everybody would do in that set of circumstances, and yet we know that's not true, but yet they believe that. In effect, they are living out of Jesus' command in the gospel lesson that we heard today. So you too, when you do all these things which are commanded you, should say, we have only done that which we ought to have done. Yet I wonder if that's what most of us do when it comes to our discipleship. See, our actions as only having done our job. I suspect that one of the differences between us and the folks that we tend to regard as heroes is that we want to be told something more than we have merely done our jobs. I mean, it's kind of a deflating statement in some ways, isn't it? I suspect most of us would like to be acknowledged or thanked in some way for what we have done. I know I appreciate being thanked for doing a job that I think was good. It makes me feel good when people tell me that they like a sermon that I've delivered or that they have appreciated the job I did at their funeral for their loved one. And I suspect all of us are like that. We like to hear words of appreciation because it lifts our spirits. It helps us find out that we matter. But according to Jesus, that would seem to be asking a bit too much, at least in our particular parable. So let's see why Jesus would have said this. What was he trying to get at with his disciples? When I was in high school, I ran track. And we had a coach by the name of Hageman, who was long on direction and drills and short on praise and thanksgiving. Every year, there'd be a group of new athletes that would come out to try and make the track team at Pattonville Senior High. And each year, everybody had to compete to see who would make that team. It wasn't just something that you could assign, or it wasn't something that if you had ran the year before on the varsity, you could assume you'd be on the varsity team again. There was no such thing as a guaranteed place. There was no such thing as seniority, and there was no special treatment. Just because you were a sophomore, a junior, or a senior didn't matter. You had to earn your way onto the team each and every year. I liked it that way, too, because you were judged according to your performance. You were judged according to how well you had done. You either finished in the top three of your event or you didn't, and that's where you would be, either in the varsity or the JV, depending on where you finished. You either made it through one of Hageman's grueling practices or you didn't make it through it. And there were always those athletes who complained that it was too tough or that they never heard any words of congratulation or encouragement from Hageman coming their way, which always used to make me laugh because they were correct. Hageman never said, "Good job." The practices were incredibly hard, grueling, the kind of practices that would make you throw up, just trying to suck air in, you know? I remember telling my father about how hard they were at times, and he shared with me a little prayer that he used to say when he ran track himself, and it went something like this: "I'll lift them up, God, if you put them down. I'll lift them up if you put them down." And I used that prayer almost every single day because when you were finished with a Hageman workout, you were whipped. I mean, you were just whipped. You were depleted of all energy reserves. You had nothing that you could say because you were just trying to catch your oxygen. And you would walk off the track field in total silence with your buddies because any kind of speaking would take away the necessary air that you needed to breathe. You know, we would come off that track just and silently walk our way into the locker room. And so as a result, we always had a few people who would quit, a few people who would drop out in the first 2 weeks of practice because it was just too difficult to continue. There wasn't enough there for them, which was just fine with Coach Hageman. He loved it because he didn't want anybody on his team who wasn't willing to work harder than they thought humanly possible. He wanted everybody on that team to do more than they thought they could do. And he didn't want anybody on his team who needed to be told all the time that they were good in order to do their job. Right? You should think it an honor to be on the team. That's where you should get your pride, not on having Coach Hageman tell you what a great job you did. And Coach Hageman got results. The year he took over as head coach, which was my sophomore year in high school, our team was ranked dead last in the state of Missouri among Division I high schools. But by our second year, by my junior and senior years, we were the state champions, 2 years running. In a real sense, that is what Jesus is saying to his disciples. If you're going to be on my team, you're going to have to work your tails off. And if you think otherwise, then count the costs. Please, think it over, because discipleship is not for everybody. There were a lot of people from our scriptures who came to Jesus and went away sorrowful because the demands that he put on them were too high, like the young rich ruler. It isn't something for those who are out to seek glory, you see. It isn't about seeking recognition with Jesus. It isn't for those who want discipleship on their own terms or to have a practice done the way they would like it. If you want to be my disciple, come, follow me, pick up your cross, and I will show you how to live a more excellent way. But don't expect me to praise you all the time, because when you do all that I have commanded you, you are only doing your job, nothing more. If that sounds hard, it was. It was hard for the disciples, I'm sure, to hear that. But what I learned from Coach Hageman was, and I believe this applies to discipleship, is that if you want to be on the team for glory or to be told by your coach how great you are, then you're on the team for the wrong reasons, and you won't last. Because all glory is fleeting. You don't win every race. You don't win every meet that you go to. Sometimes you finish second, sometimes you finish third. All greatness diminishes. The only reason to be on Hageman's team was the way it made you feel inside about yourself. To be able to hold your head high and not to fear anybody else. Let me tell you, we were more in fear of our coach than we were of any team we came up against. And I think that's why we were state champions 2 years running. We didn't fear other athletes. That was nothing. That was nothing. That was easy. I ran against them under 50 seconds. But Coach Hageman, 2 hour practices every day of the week. Let me tell you, I was always in fear. I would get cotton mouth by the sixth period in high school because I knew that practice was going to start after that. So we weren't afraid of anybody, not anybody. I didn't need the coach to tell me what a good job I'd done, right? Because when I did a good job, I knew it. Your place told you you'd done a good job or that you hadn't done a good job. Having done it was good enough. And all of us who ran for him knew that. All of us who ran for him knew that. We still stay in touch to this day on Facebook, several of us. If you ran for Hageman for any other reason, you wouldn't be able to make it through those grueling practices. And if you didn't know what it felt like to win and the joy that it brought you, or how hard it was to lose and why you didn't want to leave anything but your best on the track, no amount of praise by Coach Hageman would make up for that. You know, having lost a meet, for example, nothing Coach Hageman said to us would have made us feel better about the loss, like somehow his words would have changed the results. No, you felt good when you did well. You felt good when you gave it your all. And you didn't feel well when you didn't. Likewise with discipleship. It's hard work, you know. I think in many churches they sell discipleship as a very low common denominator to try and pack churches with seekers. At least that used to be the case, to try and get people into churches to hear the message of salvation. But they sold Jesus short in many ways because they didn't tell people about the cost of discipleship. They didn't tell people that there was a cross that each one of us has to carry. They didn't tell us that it was about self-sacrifice. They didn't tell us it was about suffering at times. They didn't tell us that Jesus would expect more than anybody in our lives from us. If you have to bury the dead, you're not fit for the kingdom, he said. If you put your mom and your dad before me, you're not fit for the kingdom, he said. Hard, hard words. Hard to follow. But the result was an abundance of life when you did. An abundance of joy. I think one of the sorry things for the church today is that it doesn't expect much of itself. I think one of the reasons that all churches right now, we're in a post-Christian era in this country. Evangelicals are on the decline. Mainliners have been on the decline since 1965. Catholics are on the decline in this country. We are not a Christian country anymore, if we ever were, but we're not now. And I think part of that reason is because when it was easy, when the state supported us, so to speak, when we could preach and pray and do all the things at baccalaureate services, then it was easy. We were kind of a cultural phenomena. But when it came to having to really do the work, to really testify and witness from our hearts about what Christ has done in our lives, we didn't do it. We didn't give people a compelling reason why they should want to follow this man that we call the Christ. How many folks push themselves and their duty as Christians anywhere approaching a breaking point, for example? How many of you have felt that you've come to church so many times that one more Sunday will be just too much for you? Or how many of you have spent so much time in Bible studies or in mission activities that you just say, I can't give one more ounce of my energy or time? How many of you put the church first? You get my drift. You see what I'm saying? Right? It's not about blaming us. It's not about trying to put guilt on us. This is a tough passage for World Communion Sunday because it's not a passage of praise, right? It's a passage of high expectations. How many folks live as disciples because they've taken the time to put into the practice of the spiritual disciplines of praying, you know, at meals, of fasting when you need to, you know, of connecting with other Christians and talking about what God has meant in your life? What have you come through that Christ has done for you that you can share with somebody else? What experiences of the resurrection, so to speak, have you had that you can offer to somebody who's suffering? All of this becomes part of what is happening or not happening in the life of the church, and thus happening or not happening in the life of Christ today. I suspect most of us want discipleship somewhat on our own terms. You know, I would love to be there, Pastor, but I've got soccer practice this morning for my kids. Now, I hear that because I've been there, right? So I'm not blaming you again. I'm just saying this is reality. Let's talk about it the way it really is. Do we want discipleship on our own terms, or do we want to follow what Christ says? Do we want to be a group of self-serving people or a church that goes out and serves the community all over the place? And if so, do we need to be told over and over how good we are? Because if we do, then I suspect that deep down inside of us, we feel that we haven't left our best. Right? I love hearing thank you. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we shouldn't say thank you to one another. But if you need to be thanked over and over and over, I suspect it's because you don't internally feel like you've given your best. You should always feel like you've given your best in whatever you do in life. And when that happens, no amount of thanks will change that reality. Just like Coach Hageman saying, oh, that's okay that you finish last. No, it's not okay. It's not. Let's be honest with ourselves, okay? How many of us serve this church, you know, as leaders in the church? How many of us have been on committees of the church? How many of us are working for the church, so to speak? How many of us are regular in our worship, are regular in our Bible studies, are regular in our mission activities, bringing others to church? This is a good church, man. Seriously, I'm not trying to critique us or be critical, but I'm saying we have to be honest too, right? If we want to continue to grow, which we're doing, let's be honest. Let's not fall into this game of let's pat each other on the back, always telling ourselves we're doing the best we can. Because I think we can do better. I think we can be packed someday again. Christianity didn't grow because we made up the training regime. If we had made up the training regime, Christianity would have died on the cross. It grew because we had a Lord who, like my coach, expected a heck of a lot out of us and was willing to say bye-bye to people who didn't want to meet those demands. When he died, who was at the foot of the cross? Mary, his mom, Mary Magdalene, dear close friend, and one disciple, if you listen to the Gospel of John, who's unnamed, but whom Jesus loved, the text says. If the demands are too high, then discipleship might not be for us or for you. And some went away sorrowful. Some went away sorrowful. But those who stayed found a joy and an abundance of life that transformed the known world. They took Rome, and within 400 years, this little band of nobodies, of misfits, of poor peasants, had transformed the entire Roman Empire into a Christendom that lasted until just recently. It still continues in Africa today, by the way, in South America. The churches there are exploding, but in Europe and in North America, I'm sad to say, it's on the decline. And that's because I think we have lost something that that early church had, that passion, that belief that when Jesus expected us to change the world, we could. We need to capture that again. We're not called to just tinker around the edges. We're not called to just put a Band-Aid on. We're called to transform the world. That's a great goal, man. It should be so much bigger than us. And what it should do is set that bar so that when we shoot for it, we're never quite there. But we're getting closer every time. I think that's what it boils down to. And so on this World Communion Sunday, I invite you to just reflect for yourselves in your own life about the costs of discipleship, what Jesus expects of us, and then to ask yourself, am I giving my very best? And if you are, you'll feel good. And if you're not, it won't matter what we say. Amen.